On this episode of the Higher Jiu-Jitsu Story Show, I sit down with an ex-student of ours, Tim Beach. Tim started his martial arts journey with karate and Filipino martial arts in high school. From there, he began learning boxing and Muay Thai. Tim wasn't really a fan of jiu-jitsu or grappling for quite some time, but his interest in MMA and a variety of martial arts slowly took him into the spider web that is jiu-jitsu. He then crossed paths with our coach, John, during the era of the commune, which then evolved over time into Higher Jiu-Jitsu. And after some time at the Higher Jiu-Jitsu Academy, Straight Blast Gym, or SBG as it's known, what is also the home of Conor McGregor, opened a gym here in Sydney, out in Leichhardt. Tim had found his calling and began pursuing his ambitions of making a career in MMA and has been training with SBG ever since. After a string of bad luck with fight injuries, including a broken arm, Tim is currently teaching kids classes at SBG and continuing to develop and sharpen his skill set while recovering. Tim intends to really make a mark on the Sydney MMA scene from the beginning of 2019, and I, for one, look forward to watching his progress and would like to wish him all the best in his future, and really look forward to seeing how he goes. So anyway, that's enough for me. So everyone, please tune in and enjoy. And while I've got you, please follow us on our Instagram page and engage within the community if you are interested, which is HJJ_stories_podcast. Thanks, everyone. All right, and we are live. I am here right now in my Potts Point mansion with Timmy, our old friend Timmy from My Jiu-Jitsu. How you on, mate?
You're good.
You're not good.
See, it's a nerves. I was going
to... Don't be nervous. Dude, don't be nervous.
I've never done this before.
It's all good.
Virgin podcaster.
Well, I'm happy to... We can hold hands through this.
Yes, I like that.
Timmy, so we sort of were talking before you came... before we went live, and you were telling me about your initial exposure to martial arts.
Yeah, so it goes a fair bit back. I started doing what was kind of like a curve in high school, so maybe around 15, 16. It was a mix of like karate and like Filipino martial arts as well. But my coach, I guess I'd call him now, but was fairly open-minded, so he's really open to like, you know, new techniques and kind of not limiting to himself to that particular style.
Yeah,
so it was quite interesting, but from there I just moved on. It just got a bit stagnant for me, so I moved on to boxing at PCYC, and I wasn't very consistent during high school, but kind of moved, did boxing, did Muay Thai, did a bit of everything.
Yeah,
and then I didn't even like jiu-jitsu. I didn't like grappling at all. I kind of thought it was like, I can respect it, but I have no interest in rolling around with dudes. It's a bit, I just don't get it. Yeah. I think a lot of people like that when they watch UFC and stuff, like, oh yeah, I like punching in the face and kicking and stuff, but I don't quite get the ground stuff.
Well, if the ground stuff, you see it in the UFC, if it's not really active with transitions and submission attempts, and it's just kind of like someone trying to stay safe and someone trying to find a way to hit them, people start booing.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's so common. But, and it's funny because when you bring that up, a lot of times then people might be stalling, but there's sometimes you've watched, like, if you watch some of Damian Maia's fights and stuff, where he's actively working, it doesn't look like he's doing anything. He's actively really trying to work for position and grips and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, sometimes people can't see what's going on there, and there's the nuance and the nuance
is something that if you understand jiu-jitsu and grappling, you can see what's happening.
Yeah,
if you don't know, like, those minor things, like someone fishing for an underhook doesn't really seem like much,
and you're like, oh, he's so close, he's almost got it, and
yeah,
before you know it, if the ref doesn't know, he just stands him up and it's like, oh, he worked so much for that. But
so what was your, and what are your, what were your intentions when you started in the PCYC to do boxing? Were you was it fitness or were you?
Look, I wanted to fight. One of my biggest inspirations was Manny Pacquiao, because I was Filipino. Like growing up, I'd watch. It was a big family gathering to watch his fights all the time, and that just made me want to do boxing. But I was better with kickboxing when kicks are involved. I think I naturally progressed to MMA. Like I remember, I did a in U12. I did like a pancration fight, which is like a limited rule. It's kind of like MMA, but more toned down rules. So that was my first ever exposure to kind of grappling. And I kind of had the idea where I would be like the anti-grappler, where I'm a striker. But I thought if I did jiu-jitsu for a month, like once or twice a week, that'd be enough to save me, to kind of get away with it. Which is funny how it turned out. I was actually winning the fight. And then in the last like maybe 30 seconds, I was kind of like, oh, maybe I'll go for a takedown. I'm doing pretty all right. So I'm like shot in from probably like 2 meters out, the shittiest double leg you've ever seen, and then just straight into a guillotine. So that was a good experience. And I didn't touch jiu-jitsu until I finished high school. So first I trained at a gym that was pretty close to me, because my girlfriend's uncle was training. He was like a higher, like 3-4 stripe white belt at the time. And then, I eventually found, this place in the PCYC, that the same PCYC where I trained at for boxing. I just saw them do jiu-jitsu there, and like, I popped my head in. I was like, oh, cool. And it was called Jiu-Jitsu Commune.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, cool. What are you guys doing? I trained jiu-jitsu as well. Can I just jump in and stuff? And it was I think the whole idea at the time was, commune. It kind of get the idea from the name. It's quite cool because there's just a bunch of people from different gyms to know, kind of like, because in Sydney, I don't know, I guess elsewhere probably as well, but the jiu-jitsu scene's kind of like, oh, you can't train at this place if you train with me, because I don't remember.
It's all territorial.
Yeah, really, especially with the, I think nowadays not as much, but back then when there was like more the old school, like first generation Brazilians from Brazil, like maybe it was a bit of that. I don't know that much about the history, but I really loved, I was drawn to this place because it was just kind of, you know, everyone just can, it was just more open, just more chill. Like there was none of that kind of politics, which was amazing. And eventually, that place, Jiu-Jitsu Commune, turned into Higher Jiu-Jitsu. So you train there now. At the moment I train at SBG Australia under Ben Power. So he's kind of actually the first black belt under Elvis and Anthony, which is where John used to train.
Yeah.
So, and props to Ben. He just got his third stripe.
I saw that. That on Instagram today.
Yeah.
Third stripe on a black belt. Well done, Ben.
His black belt is in tatters and it's like gray and almost white, which is, I think, pretty cool. Eventually I would want a black belt that's turning white. That'd be like my dream goal, I reckon. Where were we?
There's a lot I want to ask you
about. Yeah,
SBG what you're doing. But so if we could go back to like the commune and then it transit. How long were you there for before it transitioned to like, you know, Higher Jiu-Jitsu? And I think I met you when it was already Higher Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, right. Okay.
So you were there. Yeah. You were there before. So we were.
Yeah.
When I joined the gym, February 2016, it was called Higher Jiu-Jitsu, but we hadn't affiliated with Pedro Sao
yet. I see. Yeah, it was that kind of almost kind of. I think you did a seminar. Did Pedro Sao do a seminar?
He did a seminar. First, and then you kind of, I think he did before it was affiliated. He did a seminar. I wasn't at the gym at that time.
Yeah, so again, it was just, I saw it as kind of like, commune, that is, as more like a structured kind of open mat where you're free to bring your own ideas, stuff you've been playing with at the gym, and maybe test it against, you know, people and have people contribute their opinions as well.
Yeah.
Which is quite, I would say it's almost like a revolutionary thing. Like it's, and some people have caught on, there's a gym like Open Sparring that we've been meaning to get to, which is along the same sort of lines. But yeah, then it ended up, affiliating with Pedro Sau. I think John kind of really meshed with the whole, Pedro's kind of ideas behind jiu-jitsu and, you know, the use of just proper movement, which was, it made so much sense, I think.
How long were you training with John for before you abandoned us? I'm joking.
Yeah. In the, the thing is, because it was kind of like an open mat almost sort of thing, or a commune, it was not really open mat, but yeah. I was, my coach at the first gym I trained, it was kind of happy for me to do both.
Yeah.
So that was going on, I think around 2014 or 15, must have been. And then eventually I just started training with John. I was working with John a little bit more. So I ended up just training there.
Yeah.
Pretty much just at Hiya Jiu-Jitsu for a bit. And eventually, like, I think I just, my kind of martial arts journey was more getting focused towards MMA. So I wanted something a bit more kind of focused onto that aspect.
Not just pure jits, but more MMA, jiu-jitsu, striking, wrestling.
Yeah, 100%.
And that coincided with what SBG being built in like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which that was the timing, right, for you?
Yeah. I popped in actually to SBG a bit earlier because I was still tossing up. Look, I was at my first gym. I was actually training there throughout, but eventually it was I actually fought Muay Thai fights out of that first gym because they had the jiu-jitsu. Their jiu-jitsu is like 100%, it's like solid. And then they also have like a little offshoot of like their own kind of MMA program, which is a little bit smaller. And I just found there it kind of, in hindsight, I'm saying this in hindsight, at the time I was just young and excited and I wanted to jump into fights and stuff. So I'd ask the coach and stuff there's a fight and they need someone at 62 kilos next week. Can I jump in for a fight? And I thought, because I was experienced, that it would be enough, but it wasn't because I wasn't prepared. I wasn't conditioned. And he was happy for me to jump into those fights now. And this is what I'm saying in hindsight. I don't know if that was the best thing for me to do, but also if I was a coach, my coach Ben now, he wouldn't put me into fights that I'm not ready for.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of signaled to me, probably I need to change something up. But yeah, it's just been, I think I've been training at SBG for about almost 2 years now. And also, so I'm pretty involved in there because I help out with the kids classes. I run the open mats in the mornings and stuff. And so it's pretty much my work is between outside of work. I'm at the gym.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So tell me how much are you training? How often are you training? I want to know what your routine's like in terms of your personal like development.
Yeah.
You know, everything MMA.
Yeah.
And also like what kind of like work are you doing? Are you teaching the kids like the grappling, the striking? Mm. Like tell me what you're doing with the kids.
Mm. So at the moment, I run the just open mats in the morning. So that's like twice a week. We kind of had, actually, Andrew, do you remember Andrew King?
Maybe.
No. Okay. I'm sure you've seen him, but he also runs, he used to do the no-gi on Fridays at Hiya Jiu-Jitsu. I don't know if you remember, but anyways,
I don't think so.
he used to train, at Hiya Jiu-Jitsu, or I forgot if it was Hiya Jiu-Jitsu or commune at the time, but, he does some of the morning classes there as well, but he just got injured just recently. So I'm going to start taking those, but, I'm there during the daytime. We've got daytime classes on Mondays and Thursdays, so I'm there for that. They're in the evenings as well because I'm already there. And then depending on my work, there are a couple of other times. So training at least maybe like 5 times, if schedule permitting, up to like 8 times a week, but it's not necessarily always going hard because there's more volume. There's a lot of times when I'm not actually doing like super hard rolls and stuff. And the daytime classes are a little less people. So I just go over particular techniques. Sometimes it's just like two or three of us. Sometimes I even get almost like a private. That's the time to kind of, if I'm not preparing for competition or anything, just really going over like my broad game as a fighter in general. Yeah. And in jiu-jitsu, but also, you know, striking and stuff, and how and since I'm at the gym so frequently, it's good that my coach can always see my development, and kind of he's really picking up little things that I do just from being there. And again, I don't want to come off as like, oh, I'm always at the gym, it's so cool, like I'm so tough, but because it's not always like hard training necessarily.
Yeah
Like, I mean, yeah, so doing that, and yeah, outside of work, I'm still, again, I teach the kids. I don't really count that as work because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah I've taught some class, not kids classes, but classes, yeah, and it's good fun.
Yeah, it's quite rewarding. But I'm working in Louis Vuitton still. I just came back from there today, but it's mostly like on weekends and a couple of times during the week, so it's like pretty cruisy.
Schedule wise. So you're trying to focus most of your life around martial arts and like MMA and living that life
pretty much. Like, I mean, my work's quite flexible, and even though I'm only casual, I've been there longer than most people, so they kind of, I do have that flexibility, and I can schedule that around my training and stuff. So yeah. It's good in that sense. And pretty much, yeah, just that. Like, I feel like, you know, not much has sort of have come out of it, like in terms of me competing yet, but like it's all kind of in the works. It's all kind
It's all bubbling away.
Yeah, that's
and,
it.
And everyone should be ready for you to hit that Sydney scene. Look,
2019, I'm coming for everyone. 2019. That's next year, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Been hitting the head.
So when, if you give me, in how many months do you think you'll be until you have your first fight?
Really depends on the state of my arm at the moment. But look, I'm hoping for early next year, whatever shows is on in Sydney.
Yeah.
For amateurs, if there's people my weight, yeah, it'll be good to jump in.
That's good. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, you're invited.
Thank you. So tell me, when we first met, right, and you were training at Higher Jiu-Jitsu, and I think my introduction to martial arts might be a little bit similar to your, I guess, you starting at SBG. And the reason I say that is because when you joined SBG, I mean, you had experience. You were like white belt, but you were real close to blue, you were close to a blue belt at that stage already. But you then went and joined SBG, and it was a gym that was just starting out.
Yeah.
So it was like ground floor gym. Yes. One of the first people there. I was pretty early on in Higher Jiu-Jitsu as well, like early days where the gym wasn't really established. Like, we have white belts who join now and they see a fully functioning gym.
Yeah.
But like, we were there in both locations. Well, you were at Higher Jiu-Jitsu and SBG when both were like ground level.
Yeah. I guess you could say that. Yeah.
What I want to know is, when you were at Higher Jiu-Jitsu and you were doing quite a bit of jits, what did you think was your strongest aspect of your game? Like jiu-jitsu, striking, like what?
Oh, even now I would say that I'm more comfortable on my feet.
Yeah.
But I think slowly that's going more in favor of jiu-jitsu, but I feel like there's so much to learn. Like with striking, obviously, yes, look, I'm not saying that it's easy. Like there is a lot of techniques and stuff, but the timing and stuff like that is, and like learning to read people, that's a whole new other thing. But there's only so much you can do with strikes, with your punches and kicks and knees and everything else. I think like when you're on the ground, just it's literally like there's endless sort of opportunities and endless combinations of different positions that you can be in, that it just takes longer to grab a hold of, to
even sure.
get your head around what is mount, what is guard, like there's a lot. So
there is, you're constantly refining. Yeah. And if you're not refining, you're trying to learn new things.
Yeah. And as a, like, I mean, as blue belts, you're still really just at the beginning of your journey in that. So where am I? I don't even know what I was getting at. Because, oh, at the time, what did I think?
You've answered it. I was going to ask you what did you think was your best, like, skill set in MMA early on? But then now, where do you see things?
Yeah.
And I thought you might say that it was starting to lean towards grappling, but I think that that's maybe a consequence of the injuries you've had.
Possibly,
so you've not been able to have the same kind of time and commitment and focus and energy put into striking.
That's true. Yeah. I never thought about that way, actually.
But if you didn't have your injuries, maybe you'd be able to do a lot more striking, so you'd probably keep that a bit sharper.
I think the beauty of MMA is there's so many aspects that you can work. Like, I mean, just because I'm still healing. It's, again, the bone is fine now, but it just gives me trouble sometimes. But with that, you can get by.
Yeah.
There's so many other aspects to work on, like my kicks are from, like, maybe it's part of me being like a shorter guy as well. Like, everyone in the gym is taller than me, so I want to use my longest weapon, which is my leg. So that my kicking game is just like on point. Maybe because of that, but maybe because of my arm as well. Again, just what I'm getting at is that there's so much things that you can work, even if, you know, if one thing is gone. If anything, I see that I don't say it as a hindrance, because it's allowed me to focus my time and effort into other aspects of my game. But that goes into jujitsu as well. Like, I've been rolling a lot more.
You need to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. I mean, if you're someone at the, like, you know, who's real striking heavy, that, like, you know, that's at a UFC level already, and your striking's, like, elite. Like, that's enough. But I think it's, like, more and more being tapered towards, like, you kind of need to be good at everything.
Generalist, yeah.
You need to be real good at one thing, but you need to be well-rounded.
Yeah, 100%. I think a really good example of that, because what I would... I do agree with you, but one thing I would say is the people who are actually getting to a high level, like super, super high level, they kind of have that one thing that that one specialty that you know that it's almost like something that you're scared of. Like, something, because, like, look, take Khabib, for example. Like, you're worried about him just mauling you on the ground. Like, yeah. I mean, you have that one specialty that kind of, it plays into the whole greater part of the game. It might not even, like, how when he knocked down Connor, like, it was because he fainted that takedown, came over the top with his right hand. So, this is kind of, kind of off topic, but, like, Israel Adesanya as well is a good example. He's like, obviously super high level kickboxer, and his last fight, his takedown defenses, it's kind of, I know what you mean, like, you kind of need it all.
I think if you're, so like a Damian Maia, it's well known that his striking isn't that great, but his jiu-jitsu, like, is basically as good as it gets.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and I think if you're, like, exceptional in one area, it will take you very far in your career. But in 2018 onwards, I don't think that's enough to win a world title. At that level. I think at that level you need to be one of the best at one particular thing. You need to be very, very good, but your base level game of everything needs to be solid.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And if you look through, like, who's holding all the titles now, you'll see it. Like, Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
People say his wrestling's exceptional, but he's actually a better boxer than people give credit for.
That overhand right.
Yeah. His overhand right, he's still, his timing, it's still real good. Khabib, you talk about, like, wrestling takedowns. Like, his wrestling is really good, but his, I guess it's sambo, but his jiu-jitsu is also very good. His striking could use work, but he's very, very good in the other two areas.
Yeah. On that, like, we always kind of say that, like, he's the best example, just all-rounded, amazing.
Sorry, you were going to say?
No, just on Khabib, on his striking, like, I mean, you look at, you look at it from maybe a kickboxing or just pure striking kind of lens,
mm-hmm.
and then you would say that, yeah, it's not that great. But you have to look at it in the context of MMA, and, you know, it does its job for his game, and it's perfect. Like we're judging things by, I think, by different standards, but you just have to look at the results. And that's a kind of segue into kind of what I really love about jiu-jitsu. It's kind of just, you know exactly if something's gonna work or not, because you can test it right away. It's just like, or you kind of play around with things. So it's just kind of, it's almost, yeah, either something either works or it doesn't. There's no kind of, you can't get too flowery about it. There's a litmus test, like, for techniques.
Yeah.
And you can test it and not get hurt to an extent.
Jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're talking about it either works or it doesn't. The funny thing with MMA is that it's only really been around for, what, 25 years?
Yeah.
The UFC?
Yeah.
And that's, like, when MMA's gotten big. So, like, we're still trying to figure out what the best formula is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no one really knows.
Yeah. Is there a formula? Like, yeah, it's hard to say if there is, though, because, yeah, there's, you look at, like you said, when you look at the champions from kind of every division, like, they're all well-rounded, but they all kind of have their own different, like, there's so many, that I love about MMA is, like, there's so many different body types and, like, kind of attributes that you can have, and all of them, as long as you make it work for you.
Yeah.
I think that's the key, is trying to make things work for you.
So. I want to ask, you were talking about, you mentioned your arm a couple of times, and that's what's held you up.
Yeah.
Just so everyone understands, talk us through, like, what happened to your arm.
So, last September, so 2017, I fought a Muay Thai fight in Siam to Sydney. And basically, that was the first time I fought. I've done jiu-jitsu comps out of SBG, but it was the first time I fought fight per se out of SBG, which was quite exciting. But I remember during the fight, in the second round, I couldn't lift my arm up. So I just thought, okay, I'll just see what I can do. My coach was like yelling at me, like, what are you doing? Are you trying to be like Floyd Mayweather or whatever, like Roy Jones with the hand down? And then in the basically afterwards, I realized it was my elbow was dislocated and my ulna was snapped, broken. So I had to go into surgery the next day. But yeah, I fought.
So how did it happen?
I don't know. I watched the fight over and over. It's probably from a kick that I blocked. So kicked fucking hard. But yeah, I couldn't actually pinpoint the moment. I remember in hospital, I kept watching the fight just to go over, you know, what I can improve on and stuff, because there was nothing else to do in hospital. And yeah, but I did all right. Like, I felt really good in the fight.
You looked good. I've seen it.
Yeah. I wish, in hindsight, maybe it's good that the doctor stopped it, but I always say I wish they just kept it going, because I could have just ran for the rest of it. I was up on the cards. So I was just really bummed out at the time, because also it was the first time I really prepared for a fight. My first two Muay Thai fights were like a week's notice and kind of just jumped in there. But again, my coach Ben wouldn't let me do that, obviously, because he's a bit more, you know, he wants to kind of prepare a bit more. And obviously, like, you're putting your gym's name on the line, and you're kind of putting your reputation, even if you lose, you kind of have to, I think you have to make sure you have a good showing.
Yeah,
as well. Sure. And that's a big thing that I didn't appreciate. Like, I was I just wanted to jump in there with my first two fights, but this one I really prepared, and my cardio was what failed me in my first two fights. This time, like, my third round was the best round until the ref stopped it, so I felt quite good. But just since then, my arm's been, it's completely healed. Again, I mentioned it earlier, but the bone's pretty much healed over itself. Yeah. but my muscle is just super inflamed all the time. Yeah. So
his muscles got, he's got a little bit of a lump in his forearm. I can see the muscle, yeah, and there's a nice scar that's probably from straight down the line of his his elbow bone. That would be his ulna. There's a scar that's like, what, probably 15 centimeters long.
Mm. And yeah,
you did a good job, man, of breaking it.
Yeah, well, he did. Yeah, good on him.
That'll heal up though. But tell me, do you want to tell me a little bit about the rehab behind it? What you were doing and how long you were out for before you're even back on the mats doing even just jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, it took a while because I had to wait. I got a plate put in the next day, and I think I was out for about, actually it was sooner than I thought. Like, it was about maybe 2 months, which, I mean, sounds like, at the time, is like, fuck, like, just itching to get back on. I remember going to the gym just to watch, even though I couldn't train. But I had a cast just for about, it was only 2 weeks, actually. I think because the hardware they put in was pretty solid, and I just had to watch that, and I couldn't put any impact on it, so I could roll with people I trust or do technique,
yeah,
and stuff. So, you know, that I got in the gym kind of fairly quickly, considering how bad my injuries were. So within like, I think 6 or 8 weeks, I was back, just really light, kind of not even rolling, but drilling especially with people I trust. But yeah, I just couldn't like fall. You know, I couldn't risk falling. I can't strike on it. Obviously, I can't hit anything with my left arm. So I was playing a lot of guard. And I think lately, I think maybe in the last year, I've played so much half guard just because I'm always had to be on the bottom. I couldn't be on the top, and I didn't want to risk kind of falling and stuff.
Getting like swept and posting on
yeah,
or something. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or getting bucked and posting.
Yeah. So that was one thing I was really scared of. So I would just play from bottom, even if I was in side control or something. I started getting really good at just kind of finding a way to re-guard, like catch people's legs and then end up in half guard and work from there.
Yeah.
So I developed a kind of interesting kind of half guard game from that. But yeah, that's made me do a lot more jiu-jitsu, and just recently I've been getting into more striking as well. But yeah, like for now, just MMA is the way to go forward, because really that's what I've been preparing for a while now. Like even when I was training at Hai Jiu-Jitsu and also at the first gym I trained at, because I was doing both at the same time.
Yeah.
There was talks, the same coach that I said put me, like, you know, helped me out with my first two fights. There was even talks about maybe I wanted to do like an amateur MMA fight then, which is about 2 or 3 years ago, which I'm really glad I didn't, because I think like,
you weren't ready.
Terrible. Yeah. There's something to be said for just the experience and getting in there. It depends if the matchmaking is fair, and like at this level, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's really tricky to say when people have led like 0 to like 3 fights, how experienced someone really is. Cause I mean,
man, it's funny you say that. And this is a good topic. We wanted to talk about like grassroots MMA.
Yeah.
And things like that. I've been watching, like, since I've been in Sydney for the last 3 years, I've followed the MMA scene pretty closely in Australia, but mostly in Sydney.
Yeah, of course.
And like, you talk about like amateur MMA fights when people are like between their first 3 fights.
Mm.
It's hard to really match people up knowing how similar 100%. Their levels are.
Yeah.
There's like one kid out of ATT, Australian top team, that I've watched like I've been following on Instagram, and this kid is an absolute animal.
Mm.
And he had a fight. It was like, I think it was like a first round knockout. He like Jeez. Wins all the jiu-jitsu competitions. Yeah. His first amateur MMA fight, won it like easily.
Yeah.
And I don't know how people even think their kids can like go in the cage with this guy.
Yeah.
I think his name is Isaac. You probably know the kid.
He's a fairly young kid.
Thompson.
Okay, yeah, I've seen him. I think I was in his bracket for Grappling Industries. I didn't roll him, but
yeah,
I've seen him just like double leg the shit out of everyone.
He's real good, man.
Yeah.
I so the Crazy. Reason I watched, I went to a local, like, like a MMA fight thing, like maybe a year and a bit ago.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be on the card, and I didn't really know who he was until that night. And he had a kickboxing fight and absolutely destroyed the kid he was fighting.
Yeah.
And it was to the point where, like, that fight should not have been sanctioned.
Yeah.
He's just that he was that. He was just too good.
Mm. It's...
So, sorry, I don't know where... I'm just trying to reiterate on how difficult it is to really judge where people are at. And especially with MMA now, because... or even martial arts, because kids are starting so young.
Yeah.
By the time they're like 14 now, they're like serious.
Yeah, yeah.
Like highly skilled people.
Mm. And they just do... They've grown up watching MMA, and that's what they've set their goals. Like, again, if you look at... I'm fairly young. I'm 23, but... it was kind of MMA was still, it was already a established sport when I got into it, but it wasn't as mainstream as it is now. And I remember just being, just in terms of how popular the sport is. I remember when like Ronda Rousey was big, and it was kind of, people started to realize what MMA was. And then now you look at someone like Conor, and just in terms of how many people like off the street would know him.
Yeah.
And like, he's eclipsed what Ronda was. And it's just crazy how much of a normal part of thing is. It's just a normal sport now. It's not that weird kind of like underground.
Well, the bloody cage ban got lifted on WA last year.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like, that's big. I think it was last year. So in Western Australia, as of like last year sometime, there had never ever been an MMA event.
Which is stupid, because if you look at the rules, it was kind of... They'd still do MMA fights just in a ring.
In like, a boxing ring. Yeah. I want to ask, so tell me about the grassroots stuff. Like, you have some opinions on that?
Yeah, so...
I guess you can lead the direction on where it goes.
I think one thing that they don't have set up in New South Wales yet, but I know they have in other parts of the world. I think Victoria have it's called... Path to Hex, but it's run basically sanctioned by it's called IMMAF, so International MMA Federation, which I think is I know about it in part because Ben, my coach, is good friends with John Kavanagh, who kind of oversees a bit of that in Ireland, and they kind of help run the competitions, and I've seen it. It's kind of a good way to kind of step up into MMA, because the rule sets start off a little bit more limited, and then you're padded up with shin guards, and I think you can't do like certain cranks, and I'm not 100% on the rules, but that's just to give you an idea of what the difference is. Whereas I've seen shows where amateur shows in Sydney where it's kind of like, you almost, when you look at it, you can't really tell the difference between the pro and the amateur fighters, because maybe the only difference might be like the time of the rounds, but it essentially looks like the same thing. It's on a fight night, it's on a proper fight night, which is good, but also like, you want the sport to become accessible. Like you said, if there's kids like 14 and stuff who are growing up, want to do it, it's good that they're starting to become a way to build them up. Yeah. I think so. In the future, it'll be a lot better. They run it, again, they kind of run that in Victoria. So the IMMAF run is the kind of organization behind it. And I've been following this Hex. So Hex, you know about Hex, because they're probably one of the bigger organizations in Australia, and there's Path to Hex, which is kind of the amateur kind of version of that, to kind of build up their experience and stuff. So
they've partnered, Hex Fire Series has partnered with like Urban Fight Night.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
With the goal is for Urban Fight Night to host its events for more like amateur and regional level people.
Oh, awesome.
And professional as well.
Yeah.
But then, like, basically, it's like Hex is looking at trying to pick up fighters out of Urban Fight Night.
Okay.
So they're scouting fighters from those events, and it's it's a Path to Hex. Maybe Urban Fight Night will rebrand and become under the Path to Hex banner. Like, I don't know, but
Yeah, because I know there's pro fight, like, fights on those urban fight nights, so be interesting. But, like, it's good. I think the thing that's holding them back is the CSA in New South Wales. So that's the Combat Sports Authority in New South Wales, which are a bit kind of... I think recently they've been trying to kind of reach out to the combat sports community and kind of get a bit more feedback from, you know, the community. But they're a little bit kind of hard to deal with, and all the red tape and stuff is just, it's not the same. I feel like I haven't trained in Melbourne or Victoria or anything, but from what I see on the outside, it seems like they've got their shit together a little bit more. There. Yeah, a little bit more than here. But again, that's just from what I see on the outside. I could be wrong. But
I think part of it comes down to, like, the demand for it as well.
Mm.
Like, and the demand, like, MMA, the demand for MMA has really increased in the last few years.
Yeah.
And now you've got, like, you know, UFC Adelaide is on December the 2nd.
Crazy.
And there's, like, a bunch of Australians, and it's competing, and New Zealanders too. And it's actually an event that's being hosted, I think, on Channel 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's on free to air. Yeah, is that the first time they've done that?
Free to air TV, Channel 10. And it's like there's adverts on everyday TV now, like on your Channel 10 and stuff like that, with, you know, promoting. Mostly it's like Tyson Pedro and Tai Tuivasa, who are from Western Sydney, for anyone who doesn't know. And, like, so having guys like that come through the ranks and make it to the UFC really, like, puts more of a spotlight on it.
Yeah.
And it's like we've had Australian UFC fighters before,
but
just not at a time where the UFC was as popular as it is now.
Yeah.
Like, it's in everyone's homes now. So it's really accessible. So these Australian fighters really are sort of flying the flag,
so 100%. To speak. Yeah.
So that's why, like, having people like those guys on the card in December is good for MMA everywhere in Australia.
I agree, yeah. Look, for me, I don't watch free-to-air TV because I just don't have time. Or I'll watch, like, streaming stuff. But to know that's accessible to, you know, pretty much everyone in Australia, it blows my mind. Because you just told me now, and I didn't even realize it was on 10.
It's going to be, like, on Channel 10. I'm sure it'll probably still be on Fox as well. I don't think Channel 10 have, like, exclusive rights for it.
But still, just... That blows my mind, like, to see how far the sports kind of come. Because you still have people with, like, relatively, like, quite backwards views on what it is, because when they were, because I was following a little bit on the cage ban in WA, and what some of the politicians were saying about it is, like, you're really not educated about what it is. And it's just like, I really wish that public perception could kind of shift, and I think it almost has. Like, there is obviously, there are always going to be people against it, but I think it's almost come full circle. Like, it's, you know, in that 25 years, you know, since the UFC started, now it's, you know, I just feel like MMA has never been more legitimate.
It's as popular as it's ever been now.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to grow, man. It's the fastest growing sport in the world.
Crazy.
It's like, we've, like, gotten a bit away from, like, your story, which we can go to. I'm not sure if we've missed anything you want to add in. I'm sure we can talk about your fights and stuff, but with the MMA stuff, like, man, I grew up playing footy and cricket, and I used to, cricket's not everyone's thing, but AFL, like, is predominantly known as a pretty exciting sport. And with AFL, like, if someone's got the momentum and they're winning and there's, like, 20 minutes to go, like, usually you know the way the game's trending and you know who's going to win.
Yeah.
And so, like, it gets really exciting when someone's, like, closing the distance and it's, like, the game's getting close and then there's a goal in it and there's 10 minutes left and then it's real intense and it's exciting. But with MMA, it's, like, it's always exciting.
Literally anything can happen.
Yeah. And that's, you see fights where someone's being completely beaten.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the fight's, you know, if it gets to the bell, the fight's over, we know who's going to win, but then it changes, like, in an instant.
Yeah.
Someone eats a right hand and, like, the momentum swings that quickly that they can't recover and they lose.
And there's so many, I think part of it is, like, there's so many ways to win. Like, you can, there's one, just on that, I forgot who it was, but it was a while back, it was a couple of years ago, but I don't know if you've seen that, that fight where a guy gets dropped by a liver shot, who almost gets dropped,
yeah,
or he
yeah.
just, and you watch him in the interview after, he said he knew he only had one shot left,
yeah.
So it looked like he was faking it, and then came over with a right hand, but he was actually legit hurt from a body, like liver shot, and if you felt a liver shot before, they're like, they're worse than anything, like you just drop dead. And then he knew he had one shot left and just went through with one big overhand right and put the guy to sleep.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah.
Well, you see, and like Pettis's kick off the cage.
Yeah, 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 stuff like that. Like, there's so, I love this, but there's so many opportunities. And it, like, you, I mean, we just talked about it before with jiu-jitsu, where there's so many things. And when you add all the other aspects into it, you saw Yaya last week.
Yeah.
Like, what is, like, how do you train that? Like, how, why did you even think of that? Like, you know, it's people, there's so much potential still for creativity in the sport. And I think it's one of the truest kind of expressions of kind of being a human being in general. Because you're limited by not much, like, obviously, yes, there's rules to keep people safe, but it's, you know, it's the most free you can kind of be, I think. Because when I look at every sport, I think, I don't know if where I got this from, but you look at every sport, it's almost kind of like, if you look at the Olympics back in ancient Greece and stuff, all the sports were kind of like a preparation for war. It was kind of like javelin, you throw the javelin,
yeah,
you sprint, you do all this stuff. And they had boxing and pancration and stuff. But so every kind of sport, I just see it as, it's kind of almost like war in a sense. And I think when you get two guys in a cage with little gloves and not as much rules,
you then, take all the other bullshit out of
it. Yeah, it's the almost one of the most pure forms of like competition in general. Because I mean, it boils down to what every sport is kind of your, you know, competing against yourself, against some adversary, and you're using your, you know, your skills, your kind of fitness, and all this bunched together, and you have to make like these decisions in real time, and kind of game plan and stuff. Like everything just comes together.
Yeah.
In this sport, so I think, yeah, that's one of the things that I find so fascinating, and that's probably why I'm drawn to it so much.
It's like a, it's a self-development thing as well. Like training and committing, like to like the nutrition, the training, the fitness on days and mornings when you don't want to do it and you just commit to it anyway. And that's why you see like, you know, middle-aged people who are working full time and a little bit out of shape, and they'll join up and do like Wimp to Warrior. And it's like, they've never done martial arts before, but they do a competition like that. And for anyone who doesn't know, it's like they'll train basically for 6 months doing MMA.
Yep.
They'll just train from like day one, never trained before, 6 months of training, and then they have an amateur fight.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But like in those fights, they're wearing head guard, shin guard, knee guard. You're not allowed a knee. You're not allowed an elbow. Like it's, there's...
Are you
there's
on the ground or you can't...
I think there's more restrictions.
Yeah, but still, it's still a fight. You might be able
to knee standing.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you can elbow.
Yeah. But it's still a fight, like, you know.
But still, yeah, like it's... People are drawn to it. That's the thing, man. People, you know, like a 35-year-old, 40-year-old, like, dad who's working in an office is, like, training martial arts for the first time in his life so he can have a scrap.
Yeah. When you say that, it makes me think of Fight Club, where there's just something kind of missing in everyone's lives. Like, you've watched Fight Club?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah, just one of those things where, like, everyone lives in this kind of sterile environment and there's just that one thing missing.
Yeah.
And I guess, like... MMA or just whatever combat sports you do in general is kind of that perfect outlet for that.
Yeah. So. No, man, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I was slow to respond to you when you mentioned Fight Club, though, because there is one rule about Fight Club.
Okay, sorry, I broke the rule.
And it's on record.
Okay.
Tim Beach has spoken about Fight Club.
Okay, I'm like, wish I... it's on record. I can't do anything now. I'm done.
I was going to say, I wanted to ask you this before, you know, when you were leaving our gym, we're not leaving, but more just looking at the MMA path. And like we knew at the time that that's what you know, you were like destined for.
Yeah. Destined.
No, you were, man. Like we knew that was what was happening.
Yeah.
why SBG at that point in time? Why not one of the other gyms that's established?
I'll tell you what, part of it is I actually was looked into the philosophy behind SBG even before Ben started up and kind of brought it to Australia. And then they're kind of on the similar, because if you don't know, the head of SBG's name's Matt Thornton. Mm-hmm. And he started out as a Jeet Kune Do guy, which is kind of like Bruce Lee's martial art. And he came from that background, but he saw a lot of kind of things where the people who trained in Jeet Kune Do would say one thing, but kind of not really train in that way in terms of, so what he was big on was called, like he calls it aliveness, which is basically like just putting the things into practice. So basically for context, like the people that he trained with in Jeet Kune Do didn't really train anything with real aliveness, which is what he calls it, kind of how someone, a resisting opponent, would actually act. So there's lots of kind of drills and like Filipino kind of stick fighting drills and stuff that he kind of got disillusioned with. Basically, he's applied that concept and then over into MMA and kind of just trying to find out the truest kind of martial art and kind of, you know, it's basically, it's kind of like a philosopher who kind of thinks, how do I find the truth in martial arts? And basically comes down to like, yeah, kind of what's going to work if I had someone else in front of me.
Yeah.
That was long and winded. But obviously like there's that Connor kind of connection to SBG. But also when I had my first kind of interaction with Ben,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of things was along the same kind of lines of what John is all about, but in a MMA.
Our John? Just,
yeah, your John.
Yeah. Sorry, I was clarifying between like John Kavanagh.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my mistake. But a lot of the things, kind of ideas, kind of still resonate and I still have with me. Like one of the...
From John.
John, but again, I kind of like put it in an MMA context because one of the big things Ben is all about is this whole idea of kind of use what's free, change your shape. So in any kind of position, it's not about kind of learning a whole stack of moves. It's kind of just thinking, what do you have available to mm-hmm. you? And then what can you do? So when you're talking like escapes and stuff like that in positions, and it's same goes for striking. You always just, you know, use what's available to you, use what's free. And change your shape. And it's kind of a bit, kind of conceptual and kind of almost esoteric in a way.
Mm.
But when you kind of apply that to when you train in jiu-jitsu, but in any martial arts really, it's kind of, you can apply things to every situation. You don't need to have the answer for every situation because you help to make the answer yourself. You've been given the framework in which to, you know, play and explore all the options rather than kind of, I think the way jiu-jitsu is traditionally being taught is kind of like, you're in this position, this move to get out of it. And I mean, Kid Dale even talks about it a lot. It's like, there's so many things that can change in a given position or situation that you can't have like kind of a move. Like it's not like a database of moves. It's kind of, you just have these, you kind of have to learn from experience and kind of have these more conceptual kind of
ideas. Yeah. I like that. Cause I think like, I definitely think there's a, like, you know, they say like drillers are killers.
Yeah.
Kid Dale doesn't drill. He's teaches concepts.
Yeah.
So like, I understand what sort of path you're looking at. I know you're not leaning completely down Kit Dale's, that's just a reference point. Yeah. But I think there's something to be said with drilling something to have the muscle memory and recognizing when like you would perform that certain move at that point in time. But then from a concept point of view, it's like you know, you learn about things like we talk a lot about, and you understand this, you've trained with John, but like frames, being having the right mechanics, leverage and things like that. And like leverage is a, like you feel it, but it's a conceptual thing because it's, you can't really see it. It's just something that you feel and then you begin to understand. So from a conceptual perspective, when you're in a certain position, like you're saying, you might not have the exact move that needs to be performed at that point in time, but you can just like make shit work.
Yeah.
Because if you understand where like the leverage is in that position, you've got something to start aiming towards. You can look, you can look to try, like expose that leverage to your advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just seeing, as you're talking, I'm kind of seeing in my head all these ideas, and they do kind of blend. Like, I don't know if I can articulate it as well, but like when you're saying like leverage and stuff, I'm just thinking back to this week, stuff we were doing is, for example, like when you're, someone's passing your guard, kind of just to apply that, you kind of change your shape in the sense that, you know, you're creating these frames, you're using, one thing I love about, Johnny is like the holiday is you're using your skeleton.
You kind of
think of your body is okay, your muscles aren't as strong as your skeleton, like your,
if you pretend like you don't have muscles, you just use bones,
using your bones, like that's like, oh, that's so cool. And you just think of that, these positions where you, where you're strong, where you are using bones and you're using your leverage, and that kind of plays part into that whole idea of like, you know, changing your shape and changing your position as well. You're not, because I mean, like, let's say you're inside control. Someone kind of, they'll shift it slightly. Like, say they've got like a kesigatami, like a head, kind of that judo headlock.
Yep.
You shift your weight ever so slightly, and then the escapes are totally different. So you have to find, where do they feel like? Where can I? When do they have? Where do they not have base?
Yes.
Where can I take advantage of that? Where can I, you know, where can I put my body in a position where we can reverse this? I mean, yeah. When you talk about jiu-jitsu, I just have moves in my head that I'm kind of, well, as you're talking, like.
That's exactly what it's like, though. Like, and you're talking about things that are slightly different. Sorry, let me just unlock this computer. No, just need to make sure. Sorry, everyone. Computer locked after some time. You're talking about moves like slightly, you're using different words, but you're saying the same kind, like similar philosophies to us in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, obviously I can see why you enjoy being in SVG, and like our, like I've said this a million times, but the mission statement of our gym is something along the lines of, we use Gracie Jiu-Jitsu to build quality of life for everyday people. That's so cool. We build quality of life for everyday people with Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. And it's, so we're talking about like, you know, a bunch of people in the same room, training hard, sweating together to like improve as people and in martial arts. SBG says one tribe, one vibe.
Mm.
So it's this, it's the same kind of thing. Yeah. It's just different words, a different belief, but like overall, it's not, it's not different.
And I think kind of a big part of it is, I don't know how you guys structure your training, but in order to kind of, I think the best way to kind of apply all these like philosophies and stuff that we're talking about is, or concepts or whatever, is like positional training. So I think one thing that I've noticed that training there, as opposed to the few other gyms I've trained, there's so much stuff where we'll start from a particular position and kind of, the goal isn't, you're not just rolling from there. Cause when you roll, you go to what's always, you almost go to your A game all the time.
Mm.
If your goal in your head is to win. But, if you're doing positional stuff, for example, we're just trying to pass guard, or I'm just going to start from here. And then, once I've passed, we stop and reset.
Yep. So one person trying to stop passing and the other one trying to pass.
Yeah, basically stuff like that. And you can apply that to any sort of position. Sure. You can kind of explore more possibilities and more things that maybe you wouldn't have gone to, because you can't just revert back to what's good. So I think limiting yourself in terms of training, limiting like what you can do, you kind of learn more.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Because
I see that happen all the time. Like, we definitely drill in our gym, we drill like positional stuff.
Mm.
But then when it opens up to more of a free role,
mm.
like, I'll admit, I'll go to what I know best.
Everyone does, yeah.
And like, they're the thing. Like, and I'm always trying to work on certain things. So yeah. I'll try to like focus on that a little bit.
Mm.
But ultimately, you go with what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Especially like if you get put under like pressure or stress or whatever.
Yeah.
You just go back to what you know.
Yeah.
Which isn't like natural instinct, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But that's why if you're drilling from certain positions enough, those reactions in those situations form part of your base understanding and instinctive level stuff.
That's it.
Because that's, man, when you roll in the gym, like it, and even if it's full on,
mm-hmm.
a bit of what works comes down to your instinctive stuff.
Yeah.
And for you to go into a cage and compete, you're going to be at a full intensity MMA fight. It's going to be like instincts only.
Mm. You realize that a lot of time sorry if it's a bit off topic, but just remember, because we just for some context, when I did the development day last week, there's a whole bunch of other guys who jumped in as well from our gym. So it was about six of us in total. And a lot of them, I think half of them was like their first time ever fighting. And then they're always like, oh, I'm going to do this in my fight. I'm going to do this, that, whatever. But when you get down, like, I mean, like, I'm going to do this spinning shit. I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to come in with this combo and do that. When it comes down to it, when you're like, someone's in front of you trying to take your head off, you always go back to just the basic stuff almost, like, you, and it makes you appreciate like the people who do the like ridiculous, like Yair Rodriguez stuff. Like, to do that, to pull that off against a live opponent who's resisting and trying to take your head off is like so much work, because you always go back, like every time I fought, I just come back to, you know, really basic stuff. I always have in my head, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do that. But I just, you come back to basics. It's kind of like, I just use my jab.
Well, that's the thing, man. Fundamentals, your fundamentals being having a solid foundation is what's going to carry you through your career.
Yeah.
And that'll probably, your fundamentals are probably going to determine how far you get.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I like how you use the word fundamentals as well, as opposed to like, you know, I think I said it, but like using it as opposed to like basics, because fundamental has almost, basics almost has a like negative implication, like like after a certain time I don't need my basics, but like fundamentals kind of gives the impression that it's the framework from which you build everything off.
Yeah, it is, and the better your fundamentals are and the more finely tuned they are, man, that's how you get people that get to that like elite level of one aspect of the game, because their fundamentals are built so well that they can bolt on all those little nuanced stuff on top of the fundamentals.
Yeah. Yeah.
If your fundamentals are weak or not very strong, like that's when people start to break down as soon as like the little hole in their game is found, they get picked apart and they get beaten.
I think you see that in jiu-jitsu comps where, at wider blue belt, you can get away, like you'll see guys like maybe do one particular move and almost win the whole comp with just one move. They might do like a, you know, a particular choke or a flying armbar or something crazy. But when it gets to the higher levels, like purple belt and above, their fundamentals are just on point that you can't get away. They can't get away with like doing all the flash. They have to kind of work and set up things a little bit. They'll have to work harder to set all these things up. You can't get away. You can't be like a one trick pony almost. Fundamentals just take you everywhere. And I'm still trying to, you know, figure that out for myself. It's so easy to get carried away with the fun stuff, but you realize like, you know, all the, you're in probably like close guard all the time or mount, like those are positions you're always kind of,
you need to be really good in.
Yeah.
Have you, I was going to ask, so you'll get to compete hopefully early next year.
Yeah.
And you get to test out those fundamentals. Yeah. And that's when I'm sure you'll find out about the holes that you need to improve.
Yeah.
On. Even if you win, it could be a dominating win, but you'll find some holes.
Yeah.
And then you go away and work on them.
Yeah.
Tell me about like just in general, in your gym, are there like, are there any other people that are like coming along and to like look out for that you think we're going to hear about in the future?
I think, again, I don't know if I mentioned it here before you started recording, but there's just, we're trying to build up a, like, kind of, before we come up with like a, into like MMA fights and stuff, we're trying to build a small group of guys where you can train things safely, because I think part of it is like trying to not get injured as well. Which is, I guess, one of the challenges. Like, when you mentioned what made me kind of choose SBG over a more established gym would have already that experience. I'd already have that group of guys that kind of, you know, are getting ready for fights constantly.
You're not on the inner circle.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to... That would be beneficial, but being at SBG and being there from almost a grassroots thing, I've been able to have Ben kind of look at my game quite intensely, because I'm there quite often, so he can, again, he can guide me a lot more. And like, just now we're starting to, just on your question, there's a guy, Jack Lewis, who's had he's had a couple of kickboxing fights, and his ground game is, we got our blue belts together and stuff, and he's got a tricky kind of bottom game. It's kind of weird, but he's one of the guys who kind of wants to jump into MMA, and like, we're probably, it was us too, because there's a bunch of people who have done a lot of striking as well. The jiu-jitsu kind of needs a bit of work until we do MMA, but you know, a lot of people are kind of, we're starting to get that crop of guys to come up. And there's a guy, Max Smith, as well, who's, oh, he's still a white belt, but he's killing it in comps and stuff, and he's like my weight, but probably about 6 foot or something. And he's just like awkward and lanky and terrible to spar, because it's just that awkward kind of, I can't read you.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
You say he's your weight?
He's my weight.
So you'd fight guys like that?
Probably not. I can cut more weight than, I can cut to lower than him. So he's pretty lean as it is. So he's kind of walks around at 70, but he's got like no body fat on him. So he's
a featherweight.
Would, is it? Yeah.
165, 65 kilos would be him, featherweight?
Maybe. I don't even know if he can, he'd be able to cut. But look, that's still a bit further down the line. But me, I'm going to fight it. I've made bantamweight. I know I can do that fairly easily. Even flyweight might be even an option for me. So I'm walking around 70 at the moment. But yeah, there's this small kind of crop of guys who, you know, we're slowly starting to build up. And I think 2019, we're kind of making our mark.
Do you think you start seeing some people fighting?
Yeah,
there'll be 3 or 4 SBG guys on the card.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's like, the dream, hey?
Yeah, that's it. It was, and the thing is, in like preparation is a lot easier to get through when there's a whole bunch of guys doing it with you, and it's kind of, you know, there's so much shit you need to go through, like that, you know, with all the fitness, doing all the hard rounds and stuff. To have other people by your side on the same goal is like, it just makes a world of difference.
I understand what you're saying, man. Like our gym, like high jiu-jitsu hasn't really been competition focused much, but even like you saw what it was like, man. Like you're talking about building a core group of people to train in SBG, and you've got that now. And that's why you're going to start seeing like a lot more improvement from everyone, because you're building off each other. Yeah. We had the similar thing in our gym, and like it was the first batch of guys that sort of like came through, and then we all went and competed together.
Yeah,
so that's awesome. But I mean, the difference between MMA and jiu-jitsu is that, you know, you can kind of dive straight into a jiu-jitsu competition. You know, you get a couple of months of training. If you really want to compete, you just jump in. Like, you know, you're probably going to be okay. Like
you're not going to get brain damage.
Exactly. In an MMA fight, you get TKO'd and you can really have damage from it. Yeah. So, like, you know, the path to your first fight's probably shorter.
Yeah.
But we've had a bunch of, like, our my era of people.
Yeah.
That, like, obviously, you know.
Mm.
We've all competed a couple of times now. And then the second era of blue belts have competed a couple of times as well. And last weekend, we had our first two women competed in the girls in gi competition.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we've got, so now we've even got females that have competed.
Yeah.
So like it's, I understand like the, you know, like the core group and people building, we're seeing that in our gym now and that's helping the gym grow even more.
Yeah. And it just helps build everyone else up. It's, yeah, I like that whole idea because, you know, with all of these sports, you're kind of in there by yourself, but you're not, like, you've got everyone's kind of behind you. Everyone who's, you know, ever rolled with you or drilled with you, kind of even just there to support you. They're kind of, yeah, it's an individual sport, but it takes a team effort.
It does. Man, there. You say that, and you mentioned before, even if you lose, you want to put on a good showing for like, you know, your gym, no matter who you train with.
Yeah.
And it's not just for the name. It's not just for SBG or higher jiu-jitsu, but you want to put on a good showing for the people that have put in all the hard work with you.
Yeah. Yeah. They've suffered along with you.
Exactly.
As well. So it's kind of almost like you're owing to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go, man. Tell me, so you said 2019, you're going to kick off your first fight.
I hope so. Like I've always talked about it. It's always kind of been in the works. I was hoping to get it done this year, but again, my arms kind of pushed that back a bit, but you know, nothing's that big of a deal. Like again, with MMA, there's so many, you've got so many weapons that, you know, I don't think it matters that much, but but yeah, that's a goal and just go from there. Go as far as I can go with the sport, and we'll take it from there. I don't want to like sound too ambitious, like, but really I want to take it as far as I can go. I want to eventually turn pro, fight internationally and stuff. And actually this is one thing I've kind of kept relatively quiet, but one just last year I was talking to Ben, and his goal is to have someone in the UFC within 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got about 4 years to get on that.
That's you, you reckon?
I hope so. Look, again, at the moment, I'm kind of one of the more, you know, kind of consistent guys to come around. So all going to plan, hopefully within that time. I didn't care about the time frame, but yeah, I've pretty much...
And you don't need to...
Done everything in my life to kind of...
Do this.
I've like chopped and changed everything else in my life so I can pursue this as much as I can. So I'm going to give it everything.
Yeah, basically. That's the thing. Yeah. And don't be shy about telling people that. Yeah. Like that's what you want to do, yeah, man. That's like it. Fucking wear your heart on your sleeve and say it and do it. Like, do you know what I mean?
That's it.
Don't shy away from it.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Like, man, I only want to see people succeed, right?
Fuck yeah.
And that would be so good. So good to see you in the UFC.
4 years.
I remember being a white belt when I joined the gym and I was getting like choked out by the other.
Now, like, I don't want to roll you now because I feel like, oh shit. I remember when you first came in the gym. But we should roll sometime soon. Like,
yeah, we've been trying to plan open sparring for ages, man. Yeah. It'd be good fun.
Yeah.
I always, whenever I go to competitions, I always look for you and I always message you. Are you here?
Oh, yeah.
Always need to get a little cut off to me.
We're going to be about the same. Like, what are you weighing at the moment?
I think I'm about 73, 74. But I'm out of shape, man. I should be about your weight, 70.
I should be 66.
Yeah. So. I couldn't get down to bantamweight. I don't think I could.
No. But that's considering like day before weigh-ins. Like, I mean, if it's jiu-jitsu comp, 66, I'm pretty comfortable at.
Yeah.
But 70, like, I competed at 70 in jiu-jitsu for the first time this year. It was not too bad. I actually found it was more trouble down at 66 because everyone's so much faster.
Yeah.
And they gave me trouble with that.
Whereas, just speed, trying to keep up.
Yeah, with the bigger guys is kind of like slightly bigger, but like a little bit bigger guys is kind of a little bit easier. Obviously, they're stronger, but yeah.
They just don't move as quickly.
Nah.
You would probably experience that when you compete then.
Yeah, for sure. Because I had the same sort of issue with the Muay Thai things because it's for the development days they do it's the same day weigh-in. It's not day before. And my last time I fought it, the one just last weekend, I fought at 70. So I thought that's pretty heavy for me. Like I really should be at 66. But I thought I just wanted to get in there. It's padded so I'm not really fussed about my arm and I just wanted to get the confidence back as well, and just jump in there and kind of have something to work for.
So, sorry, I think I misinterpreted you when you said development days. I kind of thought maybe it was like a seminar.
Oh, okay, sorry. So development days, to clarify, is more like kind of like a toned down fight. So you're padded up, you've got shin guards and headgear and stuff. It's still a fight. You still have to be registered.
And you're going all out trying to...
Pretty much. Like, there's no rules in terms of... It's not like where they stop you for hitting too hard. But, yeah, it's basically like a... a padded fight. Almost like a smoker kind of thing. Yeah.
That sounds good, man. And it went well?
Me particularly, I felt really good. I thought it was fairly close, but I think the Muay Thai rule set isn't suited to my style of striking, and it shows for a lot of guys in the gym. Like, we had one of our guys, Alfred, who's a big kind of like 95 kilo dude, and he was just like landing clean with punches all the time, but you know, you're getting in the clinch with a Muay Thai guy, they'll throw a couple of knees and stuff and they'll score the round for you for that. And like, he was doing the same things in the clinch. He was actually landing with his knees, but I don't know I'm not as familiar with the Muay Thai rule set, but I think, they might see things slightly differently.
Yeah. When they score, they're looking for different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all right. You just need the time in the, you know, it's not like it goes against your record.
Yeah.
Time in the mat, time in the cage.
And it's not something I want to kind of go down further. Because it's not the rule set that, you know, I want. You mentioned it earlier. It's kind of, it's almost like you give and take a lot in Muay Thai, whereas we both, I think, share the same idea. Like, you're striking, you don't want to get hit. Yeah. Like, why would you want to get hit?
We were talking about this before the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Same. Because I was saying, that just to be clear, in Muay Thai, it kind of seems like they just take turns hitting each other.
Yeah.
It's like, you hit me, I hit you. Yeah. You hit me, I hit you. Yeah. And then you just see who is the first one to quit.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think that's a Muay Thai person might come at you and like be a bit mad, but it's basically that. Hey.
Yeah. Like, they stand close range and they're just in striking range the whole time, and someone covers up and...
It's almost like a bravado kind of thing. Like, I can take your shot.
Exactly. But MMA, it's a bit different.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
with the smaller gloves, like, there's more chances. There's more at stake. I had.
It's harder to defend. And the hits do more damage.
Yeah.
And it's harder to block.
And the takedowns as well. You got to think of that as well when you're striking, which changes the whole dynamic of the fight. Like, personally, when we do like sparring rounds, we'll do some like kickboxing ones, and then we'll change it up. So next round, you do. Kickboxing with the big gloves, but with the takedowns as well, and that just changes everything up. Like, when you can start to threaten that, you have to, you stand differently, you
just kind see of everyone's faint hands come lower.
Yeah, and it just adds a new dimension to striking. So yeah, so no more Muay Thai, basically.
Focus on what you're trying to do.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, mate, do we have anything else to add? Because it is 8:30, I believe you may need to.
I think that's basically, we can do this again if there's more.
Have you got more time?
Probably should get to my girlfriend because she's going to be wondering where I am, but look, this was fun.
It was, man. Hey, dude. Thank you so much. We've been planning to do this one for a while.
Ages. It's been always like, I feel like I'm the one who's always pushing it back.
No, you're right. You bailed on me the other weekend, so just, I'll throw that on the record.
You're going to choke me even harder. You're not going to let go once we... When we actually roll, not going to go easy on me.
If I catch you and you tap, I will let go.
Thank you.
I'm sure you'll be getting me just as much.
Yeah.
I was going to say thank you. You're actually, just so you know, you're the first person outside of our gym that we've interviewed.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Other than we've interviewed some people from Leverage
Jiu-Jitsu. Oh, yeah. But your association.
And their family, and they're in our association.
Yeah.
So they're like brothers. But you're the first one out of our... I mean, you're still remembered fondly at High Jiu-Jitsu, so you're always a little piece of our heart. But yeah, you're the first one from another gym. Cool. Hopefully there'll be more in the future.
Yeah, awesome.
Be nice to talk to Ben too. I'm sure Johnny would be keen on that.
Yeah. Yeah, they train together, so like, you know, that'll be cool. And I think they have the same sort of... Look, essentially, you kind of said as well, there's this kind of same underlying ideas, I think, and it's just applied differently. So
yeah. Make it happen, man. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Bring it in.
See you, everyone. Hope you guys enjoy this. And, man, all the best of luck with the first fight coming up, hopefully early next year.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Peace.